Welcome to the Litigation Finance Podcast. I'm your host, John Freund. This podcast is brought to you by the Litigation Finance Journal, the only dedicated news source to the litigation finance industry. Please visit www.litigationfinancejournal.com. Our guest today is Michael Kelly, partner at Parker Poe. Parker Poe is a regional law firm that represents many of the Southeast's largest corporations and local governments. Prior to joining Parker Poe, Michael served as general counsel of EMP Global, where he oversaw $8 billion in assets across 10 different investment funds in emerging markets. Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Good afternoon, John. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. So we're in for a really interesting discussion on litigation funding from a corporate perspective. You have prior GC experience. You also have you also engage with GCs and in-house counsel quite regularly in your current position. So let's start by discussing what the climate was like prior to COVID. So last year, Burford Capital conducted a survey of over 500 CFOs and senior finance professionals. This was in the UK, the US, the UK, and Canada. The survey found, and I'm quoting here, a majority of finance professionals, 63%, say their companies have abandoned meritorious claims given fears of adversely impacting the bottom line. Over three-fourths, 77.6%, say their companies have unenforced judgments and uncollected awards valued at $10 million or more. So despite statistics like that, there has been a reluctance on the part of corporations to fully adopt litigation funding. What do you attribute that reluctance to?
Well, thank you again, John. I think the general counsel sort of corporate use of litigation finance is sort of the next evolutionary phase of this industry. As we saw with law firms, over time, they became more familiar with the asset class. They became more familiar what it can mean for their own practices, and of course, what it means for their clients. And I think the same experience is going to happen with the general counsels. I will note that over the last 2 years especially, there's really been an increase in attendees at various conferences by in-house counsel and CFOs. I think there's definitely a focus on becoming more familiar with the asset class and what it can mean for, for the CFOs and the GCs and their businesses. But it's a question of getting familiar with it. And I think it is an industry that is still in the process of growing and will continue to evolve. But I do see this growing interest from the GCs and the CFOs as they look for ways, especially now in the post-COVID timeframe, in which they're going to have to take a hard look at assets they have, how they can monetize those assets, how they can perhaps bring additional source of revenues in. And I think that's important that as GCs, and certainly something I endeavor to try to do when I was in-house, that we look for ways to align ourselves on the business side. We're not just on the defensive side, trying to protect the business, rather we're looking for ways to monetize and create opportunity for the businesses as well. And litigation finance will certainly allow GCs to do that.
Yeah, and that's a great point, actually, about the increased participation in conferences, events. It's definitely a harbinger of what's to come, likely. When you discuss litigation funding with CFOs, GCs, in-house counsel, what are the questions, what are the concerns that they have?
I think, for those who are just gaining an understanding of what the industry is about, they really want to understand, of course, what the exposure is for their companies. They hear that it's sort of non-recourse financing, but they really want to understand what that means. What are the exceptions to that? When, in fact, could, my company become liable, not just for the proceeds from a particular litigation that may be enforced, of course, but also are there possibilities of indemnity claims? What kind of things do I need to be attentive to that would take away the non-recourse nature of litigation finance? So I think that's a really probably the primary question that I get trying to understand. What is the risk or the downside to litigation finance? I think they also really want to understand more about just the structuring of the transactions, either from a tax perspective, again, from a liability perspective, what that can really mean. They're focused on reps and warranties they have to make about the claims. And of course, as GCs, we're always very focused on, on a little bit of our own reputations too inside the company. So we want to make sure that whatever product we bring to the CEO or CFO or strategy that we can really discuss it, have it been well thought through, and can clearly recommend that.
Yeah, and then so playing off of that last point you made, in terms of the reputation, I guess that sort of leads into the culture, the mindset of a GC. And if you could put your GC hat on for a moment, which I know you wore for quite a while there, you know, GCs in-house, you guys are trained to think of yourselves as cost savers, not necessarily revenue generators, profit generators. Would you consider that a roadblock for the industry in terms of convincing more GCs to adopt litigation funding?
You know, I think the mindset is more a defensive one. How do we, as GCs, how do we protect the company that we're working for from liability? And of course, that also means, you know, the costs associated with defending against that liability. So we spend a lot of time, you know, looking at the negative what ifs in the business and trying to head off problems. I do think, though, that as you're pointing out here, it's really important for GCs to put on the more offensive hat, in the sense that going and looking at the assets that the company has that may be lying dormant, maybe it's certain patent assets, maybe it's certain litigations that are ripe for prosecution, but the companies haven't really wanted to go on to their balance sheets to try to finance those. You know, but I think the GCs can become heroes in many ways, right? They can identify these assets. They themselves understand what strengths and weaknesses are of some of these cases. And I think by reaching out to litigation funders and to their law firm partners, they could strategically identify which assets are most likely to bear fruit for them and which ones would be worth trying to raise litigation financing behind. You know, I do think it is important that GCs put themselves in the same seats as their CEOs and CFOs and look for ways to not only defend against loss of value to the company, but increase value to the company as well. And litigation finance as a tool is a relatively new tool for GCs is a very valuable way for them to do that. And of course, in turn, improve their own profile in front of the CEOs and CFOs as sources of revenue and not just cost savings.
So what about post-COVID now? Do you anticipate some more proactivity from GCs in terms of approaching litigation funders and engaging with funders? Are you predicting a spike in interest from corporations and in-house?
I would say, John, that by the type of calls that I am receiving, I think empirically that is the case. There is an anticipation of, you know, how it is that we can bring additional revenues into our company at a time where other aspects of our business may be struggling or maybe there's a bit of a downturn. So they are looking at what are these maybe kind of quote dormant assets that have just been lying around. Is there something we can do with those? And so there's been a number of conversations I've had over the last, you know, 2 or 3 months with GCs as they kind of think about their dormant assets or their unasserted, you know, patent portfolios, for example, and what are the best ways to try to bring some value to the company from those. So I think empirically, yes, I am already seeing quite a lot of increase in interest. And I think it's going to follow a little bit, like I'm also seeing in the law firm context, where, you know, law firms are also now increasingly looking to try to receive litigation financing as part of their own business models and not just, you know, representing clients. It's obviously a lot of law firms have been engaged in this for a while, but I do see an increased interest from sort of mid-level and even smaller size law firms who may look at litigation finance as a way to help them attract new clients because they can take on alternative fee arrangements that they normally might not be willing to have taken in the pre-COVID space.
Gotcha. And that's all great news for the industry, for the funding industry. I want to ask you, though, about the perception of litigation funding amongst GCs. This is something we've reported on in the past. You know, some very prominent GCs have spoken out negatively about litigation funding. I've heard anecdotally about how, you know, GCs will have funding used against them and it sort of leaves a sour taste in their mouth. Do you foresee a perception change coming here now that we're turning the corner with COVID? And of course, funders are well capitalized. And as you said, you know, GCs can be heroes. Is this going to be a real sort of turn? Is this a turning point? Let me ask you that. And have you noticed any perception change in those conversations you're having?
I think it depends a little bit, John, on what the business is. Traditionally, you know, there are business segments who seem to find themselves more targets of claims. And of course, litigation funding, it, you know, is allowing plaintiffs to prosecute claims against those targets that they may not have been able to do previously. So I think there are certain industries and certain individuals, GCs, who will continue to have kind of a scant view on the industry because there's a likelihood that they're going to be receiving, you know, more claims against them, you know, and their businesses. On the other hand, though, I think there are a number of other potential, you know, GCs and companies who, as I alluded to before, you know, will need to look at their available assets and say, you know, is there something we can or should be doing with this, rather than it's not really a luxury. You know, we really do need now, sort of post-COVID, to be trying to maximize our revenues from whatever sources we can. And so I think there's going to be those who will continue to look askance at the industry because they will find themselves on the receiving end of more claims and more things to defend. On the other hand, there'll be more, you know, potential claimant GCs coming out than what we've maybe seen historically. I will add, John, that it's always been one of my arguments for this industry that even for the companies and the GCs who may be more on the defensive side, more likely to see more claims come because of litigation finance, in many ways, they should appreciate the fact that a litigation funder is in the space, because litigation funders, you know, do bring a certain discipline to the cases and claims. They're not going to just fund, you know, unmeritorious claims. And we typically find that there's a greater propensity to settle claims at more reasonable values. So while there may be more claims, I think they're rational claims. And so therefore, even those GCs and companies that may be on the more receiving end of more types of claims should appreciate the fact that litigation funders in the picture, because it can help, you know, number one, weed out non-meritorious claims, but also, also hopefully settle those at more reasonable values.
Yeah, those are some really great points. Actually, the rationality of the claims, that's a great point. I want to just transition over to deal structuring for a moment, because I know you have a lot of really extensive experience with this. When it comes to deal structuring for a litigation funding agreement, there is no one-size-fits-all agreement, right? These are bespoke agreements. That said, when you structure deals, what can you recommend keeping an eye on in terms of what to look out for when structuring a litigation funding agreement?
You know, I think this is an industry and an asset class that is premised on sort of shared value and shared risk. So I look first and foremost at the term sheet for, you know, shared incentives between and among the funder, the law firm prosecuting the case, and of course the claimant. You know, all parties have to be in the same boat, rowing together kind of at the same speed here. So I start with the business deal, and I try to look for where are the shared incentives. Is the deal balanced? Is it sort of fundamentally fair to all three you know, participants in this stool of litigation finance? And so I start with that. And because I think in the end too, while we can always, you know, have provisions and terms that can help us with enforcement from the funder's perspective, of course, the enforcement of the funder's rights and benefits that they've negotiated here, in the end of the day, it really comes down to the proper economic incentives. It's the incentives to sort of settle at good value. It's the incentive to be able to work constructively together for the shared purpose, and to see the case through what could be a lot of uncertainty. Right? It's not all good news. You know, it could be a lot of uncertainty, and it requires the ability to communicate and to continue the dialogue between funder, law firm, and claimant even after the deal's closed. And that becomes, you know, pretty fundamental to the success of a lot of these of the funders and the transactions. You know, having said that, though, John, of course, there are provisions that we you know, increasingly see in documents to help, you know, protect the funders. They're more and more a tendency to move away from you know, sort of attorney-client trust accounts as the repository for proceeds from claims to actual bank accounts that are subject to deposit account control agreements. Basically taking the proceeds out from the control of the claimant, out from control of the law firm, trying to segregate those in a clearer way. you know, I also think that, you know, there is a big focus in the transactions about when a deal is recourse and when it's not recourse. Again, the industry is premised on being effectively non-recourse financing, but there are circumstances in which the deal needs to become recourse, particularly if there's, you know, sort of bad boy actions and things that may have been not known that should have been known at the time the deal was undertaken. So, you know, we do try to, you know, build in, you know, again, some legal incentives as well that the agreement can perform as people negotiated. But first and foremost, I think it's just important to get the business deal right. And I also will say, John, that I think the funders who I've seen just be the most successful at in this industry are those who really do look at themselves as being in the picture with the claimants and law firms during the process of the case. You know, they add value, not just their invested capital, but they add knowledge. You know, there's great litigators who are you know, working with inside the funders. They've got a lot of experience. A lot of great finance people inside the funder groups as well, who can help you know, the claimants and the law firms, you know, analyze, you know, settlements and the values of the claim as it develops along the way. So there's a lot of value that I think funders provide to the table that is just not, in addition to their investment capital. And I think it's those funders who continue to look at themselves as, in a way, partners with the law firms and the claimants going forward that are the most successful. And I see those relationships being the kind where the claimant says, well, I'm going to go back to this funder again because I had a really good experience. Same way for the law firms. And something that does bear more and more attention is the tax treatment of these transactions. I know there's been, you know, a couple of recent cases that have discussed the issue of particularly law firm financings and when that money comes into law firm, how it gets treated. Is it income at the time? Is it, you know, are these true loans? Are they investment contracts? You know, and I think being attentive to tax structuring and the particular situations of law firms and the funders and the claimants and the tax impact of these transactions is really important, especially where there might be an international you know, player somewhere in the picture. That's especially important.
My final question here, and you touched on the relationships that funders have to build. Obviously, like any business, this is a relationship-driven one. What can litigation funders do from the funder's perspective? What can and should they do to differentiate themselves as they approach corporations? There's obviously a lot of competition out there in the market now. There's a very high likelihood of more funders emerging given the current climate. So what would you recommend as far as funders that they should do or maybe not do in order to put their best foot forward when meeting with potential clients?
I think that in a word, John, it would be do their homework. And that means, you know, don't go into making your presentations only about what, you know, the deals that you've closed, the amount of money that you've raised, you know, the type of cases that you've handled. All that becomes important, but that can be, you know, provided to the target, you know, client or target funded party, you know, at a later time. I think it's really important, as we saw, you know, funders in the context of being able to introduce this industry to law firms, is to be able to show what value can we provide your particular business, getting to know the business, the company that they're now in front of. What does this business actually do? What type of claims is it likely to have? What kind of claims are likely to come up in the future? You know, and frankly too, you know, one of the things that I always appreciated when I was in house is the lawyers who really tried to get to know me as a GC. They want to know a little bit about me and sort of how I looked at business that I was working in and what was important for me. And so I think it really comes down to homework. And again, the funders who I see being really successful at this take the time to research their you know, the target for funding. And again, whether it's law firm or whether it's company, it's somewhat the same analysis. But you know, what is this company? What risks is it facing? Read the news, get the background on the company. What particular unique pressures is it under now? Find out about the CEO, the CFO, the GC, and try to address a presentation that is really tailored to that particular company rather than a generic one. There's a lot of great presentations for funders out there, but you need to find a way to say, I understand your business and I'm really interested in what you do. I think that's a really important message when you walk in the door.
Yeah, that's a great point. Form that partnership. Think about it as a long-term partnership as opposed to just a financial transaction. It's always great advice. And Michael, this entire podcast was chock full of great advice. We really appreciate the level of detail and all the insights that you've shared with us today. Thank you so much for coming on here and sharing those with us.
It's been my pleasure, John. Thank you again for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you'd like to learn more about Michael and Parker Poe, you can visit them at their website, www.parkerpoe.com. And thank you all for listening on this sort of GC corporate-focused episode of Litigation Finance Podcast. We hope to see you next time. Thanks for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.